You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our story from Exodus today takes place about a month and a half after the Israelites have escaped Egypt. And already the reviews of freedom are not good. Moses and Aaron have led them out of slavery, across the sea, and into the wilderness, where it turns out there's no concierge desk and no continental breakfast. The people are tired, hungry, and increasingly convinced that Moses has absolutely no idea what he's doing. With a remarkable capacity for selective recall, they begin obsessing over life back in Egypt, talking about the pots of meat and bread and, in the Numbers version of the story, the cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions they used to enjoy, apparently forgetting the tiny detail that those good old days also included slavery. Evidently, given the choice between freedom without onions and slavery with onions, they're beginning to think the onions weren't such a bad deal.
Our words of wisdom are from Exodus chapter 16, verses 2 through 15, the Message version.
The whole company of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron there in the wilderness. The Israelites said,
"Why didn't God let us die in comfort in Egypt, where we had lamb stew and all the bread we could eat? You brought us out into this wilderness to starve us to death, the whole company of Israel."
God said to Moses, "I'm going to rain bread down from the skies for you. The people will go out and gather each day's ration. I'm going to test them to see if they'll live according to my teaching or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they have gathered, it will turn out to be twice as much as their daily ration."
Moses and Aaron told the people of Israel, "This evening you will know that it is God who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning, you will see the glory of God. Yes, he's listened to your complaints against him. You haven't been complaining against us, you know, but against God."
Moses said, "Since it will be God who gives you meat for your meal in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, it's God who will have listened to your complaints against him. Who are we in all of this? You haven't been complaining to us. You've been complaining to God."
Moses instructed Aaron, "Tell the whole company of Israel, come near to God. He's heard your complaints." When Aaron gave out the instructions to the whole company of Israel, they turned to face the wilderness, and there it was, the glory of God visible in the cloud.
God spoke to Moses, "I've listened to the complaints of the Israelites. Now tell them, at dusk you will eat meat, and at dawn, you'll eat your fill of bread, and you'll realize that I am God, your God."
That evening, quail flew in and covered the camp, and in the morning, there was a layer of dew all over the camp. When the layer of dew had lifted, there on the wilderness ground was a fine, flaky something, fine as frost on the ground. The Israelites took one look and said to one another, "What is it?" They had no idea what it was.
So Moses told them, "It's the bread God has given you to eat."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Once upon a time, a couple of friends happen to run into one another on the street, and one of them looks absolutely miserable, like his whole world has caved in. His friend says, "What happened? You look terrible." The guy says, "Well, 3 weeks ago, my uncle died and left me $50,000. His friend says, "$50,000? That doesn't sound so terrible." No, you don't understand. 2 weeks ago, a cousin I barely knew died and left me $95,000, tax-free. "All right," his friend says, "I'm still having trouble locating the tragedy here. Well, Last week, my grandfather died and left me almost $1 million. His friend just stared at him. So, why are you so miserable? And the guy says, well, this week, nothing. And there you have it, friends. The human condition in a nutshell. How quickly abundance becomes normal. And yesterday's unbelievable gift becomes today's baseline expectation. Take our Exodus story for today. First off, as a professional killjoy, I'm obliged to remind you that whatever ancient memories may lie underneath the Exodus tradition, we have no archaeological evidence that there were ever Hebrew slaves in Egypt at all, let alone hundreds of thousands of them escaping Egypt and getting lost for 40 years in a wilderness roughly the size of West Virginia. And frankly, people who are preoccupied with trying to calculate the Israelites' daily mileage in the desert are missing the whole point of the story. This is a classic sacred origin story and has nothing to do with pinpointing things on a map. Instead, this particular part of the story is asking a deceptively simple question. How much is enough? And the way it answers this question is through a strange, magical mystery substance that no one can identify. They wake up and find this weird, flaky stuff covering the ground, and say in Hebrew, manna? So the word manna literally means, what is this? Although I think the translators missed an opportunity here, because given the circumstances, the functional translation is probably closer to, what the hell is this? And Moses essentially says, breakfast. Now, generations of well-meaning biblical literalists have tried to identify manna as some kind of tamarisk tree sap or insect secretion or coriander-like substance that appears naturally in the desert, but it's like trying to find the recipe for ambrosia, the legendary food of the Greek gods. No one does that. You just know it's the enchanted and magical food in the story. But one thing is certain. Manna comes with strict instructions, namely that everybody is to gather what they need for that day, one omer, a couple of quarts per person. That's it. Not extra for tomorrow, not enough to fill a storage unit, not enough to corner the manna market. Enough for today. Inevitably, some people think, yeah, I'm not falling for that, and gather extra anyway. But come tomorrow and they discover their carefully hidden surplus is crawling with worms. But then there's another detail of the story that I hadn't noticed before reading the passage this week. And it may actually be the most radical part of the story. Right after our passage today, it says that when the people measured what they had gathered, supposedly one omer each, those who gathered too much had nothing over, and those who had gathered too little had no shortage. Inexplicably, no matter how much was gathered, it all leveled out to be just enough. And suddenly, this isn't just a quaint story about being satisfied with what you have. This is about organizing our communities around the idea that everybody should have enough, and that nobody should have to go without so somebody else can have more than they could possibly ever use. Accumulation for its own sake is not evidence of blessing, but a failure to trust that come tomorrow, there'll be enough. and a failure to notice whether everybody has enough today. The one who gathered much had no more than they needed, and the one who gathered little, for whatever reason, had no shortage. And maybe that's the first thing we need to recover in a culture that seems to have completely lost the ability to recognize the word enough, be it food, entertainment, or doom scrolling. We've almost lost the capacity to say, that's enough for today. And without that capacity, we'll almost certainly never know sublime experiences like contentment or the simple joy of satisfaction. It's all about more, more, more. It's all about anxiety about the future. In large part, because human beings possess an extraordinary ability to live in places where no other animal spends nearly as much time. Yesterday and tomorrow. One of my mentors, Bill Martin, used to tell a story about the Creator who delighted in all that had been made, but took particular delight in the humans. They'd been given so much, the beauty of the earth, food enough to sustain them, one another for companionship, and minds capable of imagination, memory, laughter, and love. One day, Hasatan, the adversary, came before the Creator and said, "You've given these creatures too much. If they know only blessing, what meaning can their gratitude possibly have? If their love and trust are to mean anything, they must also know a curse." The Creator smiled and said, "I've already given them one." The adversary was surprised. "What curse have you given them?" And the Creator replied, "Unlike all the other creatures, I've given them the power to live in three places at once. They can live in the past, they can live in the future, and they can live in the present." "Those are all gifts," said the adversary. "Yes," said the Creator, "that is what makes the curse so effective. Without great care, they will spend every moment regretting a past they cannot change and fearing a future that has not yet come. They will never know the gift of the present." I don't know about you, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, I can revisit something stupid I said 15 years ago with such vividness that my body reacts as if it's happening again right then. We can dread conversations that have not happened, catastrophes that may never materialize, diagnoses we haven't received, losses we haven't suffered, elections that haven't occurred, conflicts that haven't begun, and futures that exist nowhere except inside our own frightened imaginations. Memory and imagination are among our greatest gifts, but they also make it entirely possible to miss our actual lives. We can spend today regretting yesterday while worrying about tomorrow, and then wake up tomorrow and regret how we wasted yesterday worrying about today. Truth be told, the only place actual contentment can happen is here. Now. Not because the present is always pleasant, and not because everything is okay, but because this is the only moment in which life is actually happening. A hummingbird outside the window, the dog asleep beside you, coffee with someone who knows your stories, music that suddenly takes you somewhere you weren't expecting, a gorgeous sunset you nearly missed because you were looking at your phone. Nothing monumental, nothing particularly spectacular, just life saying, quietly and persistently, here, now. It's enough. One night, Mullah Nasruddin was sleeping deeply, dreaming that a mysterious hand was placing enormous, glistening gold coins into his purse. 1, 2, 3, Nasruddin counted with delight. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then the hand stopped. Nasruddin stared at it. 10, he said. Nothing happened. I must have 10. Still nothing. Then Nasruddin became furious, arguing with this mysterious hand, demanding his 10th gold coin, insisting that 9 simply would not do. He raised such a fuss that he woke himself up. He opened his eyes and the coins were gone. The hand was gone. Everything was gone. So Nasruddin immediately squeezed his eyes shut, held out his hand, and whispered, "Okay, okay, 9. And there we are. How much of life do we spend bargaining for that 10th coin? How many perfectly good days do we fail to inhabit because they aren't the days we imagined? How many people do we fail to appreciate because we're concentrating on how they disappoint us? How much beauty do we overlook because we're waiting for something spectacular? How much of what we call ambition is actually the inability to say enough? And how much of what we call security is simply our attempt to hoard tomorrow's manna? Maybe that's why Jesus, centuries after the Exodus story was first told, taught people to pray not for some warehouse full of bread as a guarantee against anything bad ever happening. He didn't even teach people to pray for my daily bread, but give us this day our daily bread. Not just enough for today, but enough for everyone. So maybe the soul food practice this week is being intentional about the holy art of enough. At least once every day, stop and consciously notice what is present before your mind begins inventorying what is missing. Experiment somewhere with saying, "That's enough for today," whether it's food or spending or work or television or scrolling or news or outrage or whatever it is that has you conditioned to believe that just one more will finally satisfy you. And then make enough possible for somebody else. Because being content, being satisfied in a biblical sense, is never only a personal spiritual achievement. If I have more than enough, while my neighbor doesn't have enough, something has gone wrong. The story of manna in the desert insists that whatever enough is communal. Those who gathered much had nothing over. Those who gathered little had no shortage. Everybody eats. Everyone is considered. Everyone is valued. And somebody who understood this better than most is one whom we're gathering to remember and celebrate this afternoon, Angela Swetnam. In gatherings large and small, she had a signature practice, one that I've adopted in my own family, that for me rises to the level of sacrament.
This is something that I've expressed often when friends and family are together. Look around you, isn't it great that we're all here together?
Look around you. Isn't it great that we're all here together? Because one day we wake up and discover that the dream is over, that somebody who used to be sitting at the table isn't sitting there anymore, that voices we assumed we would hear again now live mostly in our memory. And suddenly, all those moments that seemed so ordinary while they were happening reveal themselves for what they were. Manna, daily bread, just enough. Here and now. So maybe this week, before reaching for the 10th coin, before worrying about tomorrow's manna, before comparing the life that you have with the life you've been imagining, practice Angela's sacrament. Look around you. Notice who is here. Notice what is here. Notice this astonishing, unfinished, imperfect life while you're actually living it. Maybe every once in a while, let yourself whisper the words our culture is terrified we might learn to say. This is enough. And then do whatever you can to make sure it's enough for everybody. Be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.